Missing this?
I remember Ollie texted me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power.
Less flashy than a Jurgen Klopp smile, but just as effective.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. We're going to be looking ahead to the Champions League race and the relegation dogfight. A reminder that our football coverage here in Off the Ball is sponsored by Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. Will O'Callaghan is on the line with me, as is Philip Egan. Phil, we're looking ahead to the relegation dogfight. That's the only word I will accept on the show going forward. It's a mad weekend we have coming in the Premier League. We saw what happened in the Championship when all these games are played out at the same time. An exciting period for football fans all around.
Yeah, can we call it the battle for survival, the relegation battle?
Six pointers.
But yeah, no, you're right. Obviously, the title is wrapped up a long time ago, but we've got this unique situation now on where the winner on Sunday between Leicester and Manchester United is pretty much guaranteed a top four finish. Even both, if they draw, there's a chance they could still finish, both finish in the top four, depending on how Chelsea get on against Wolves. Then at the bottom end, I mean, you have to hand it to Aston Villa. They've really pulled it out of the bag. The fact that they've climbed out of the relegation zone, albeit on goal difference, but the fact that they've picked up 7 points from their last nine games, I thought they looked dead and buried after that United performance when they were beaten comprehensively at Villa Park. But then they go, they beat Palace, they beat Arsenal, disappointed to draw against Everton, but they have momentum behind them, and I kind of feel a draw might be enough for Villa this weekend, and I'd be quite confident they'd get it at West Ham.
Well, this is my favourite time of the year, not because there's so much on the line, not because we're going to see who gets Champions League, who gets relegated. It's my favourite time of the year because I get to do up my Premier League permutations. Everyone loves permutations, and here are the permutations for the Premier League this weekend. Champions League, we'll start off there because that is what everyone's probably going to be looking at. First of all, it's between Man United, Chelsea and Leicester. If Man United win and Chelsea win, then United finish third and Chelsea finish fourth. If Man United and Chelsea both draw, then United again are third, Chelsea are fourth. If Chelsea win and United lose, then Chelsea get that automatic Champions League spot and Leicester go into the qualifiers for the Champions League. If Man United win and Chelsea lose, then United are third, Chelsea are fourth. If Chelsea lose and Man United both lose, then Leicester will jump into third and Man United will finish fourth on goal difference. I'll get you the permutations for the relegation. I know everyone's going to stand by waiting for those dramatic permutations for the relegation battle. But first of all, Will, want to get your thoughts on the Champions League race. Chelsea up against Wolves, United up against Leicester. We'll start with the Leicester-United game because that's where most eyes will be drawn to. That's also where we'll have live exclusive commentary off the game with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr as well, if you want to listen to the game on OTB Sports as well. This is probably make or break for Ole Solskjaer, Will.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's set up very interestingly ended because the way the last two fixtures have worked out in terms of the Champions League race, you've got what effectively feels like a playoff between Manchester United and Leicester. Leicester would have probably taken this position start of the season with both hands if you'd offered it to them, that they'd be sitting in fifth place and all they have to do is beat Manchester United at home to qualify for the Champions League. But that doesn't tell the full story in terms of the collapse that they've suffered since Christmas. This is a Leicester team who were trying to keep pace with Liverpool in the title race going into St. Stephen's Day. Even when they had the wobble and some poor form before the break, they still, with nine games to go, were 8 points clear of Manchester United and really should have been able to wrap up the top four race. It's going to be a salvage job on the last day if they're to qualify. While, you know, Manchester United, remarkable thing, they could finish up in third place when they were going into the break because of the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't think anyone could have foreseen how consistent they were going to be over the last few weeks. They'll be frustrated a little bit too that they perhaps don't have this wrapped up in time because of the games against Southampton and against West Ham at home in recent weeks, where realistically, if they'd won those, they'd already be assured of a place in the top four and a third place finish. But again, United has form has been remarkable in the second half of the season, particularly since the pandemic. They've found a way of getting a front three that works in Greenwood, Rashford and Martial. There's so much movement there. And then I think Pogba has been re-energised a bit. Okay, he didn't have a good game midweek by Bruno Fernandes coming in. Fernandes has been a goal and assist machine so far. So that has just turned their fortunes around. Even though they look susceptible at the back and can possibly make mistakes, and maybe Jamie Vardy can get in behind them this weekend, I think you'd fancy Manchester United to go to the King Power Stadium and get themselves a draw, which would see them finish up in the Champions League spots. But Chelsea, and I know we'll probably talk about this game in more detail in a moment, it's all about motivation when it comes into this last weekend. And Wolves have a chance to qualify again for the Europa League next year. But given that there's a good chance Tottenham beat a Crystal Palace team where their form has gone absolutely off the rails, Wolves are going to have to win to ensure that they're in the Europa League, because we know that Arsenal are going to take that last Europa League spot via the FA Cup. So sixth place now becomes the Europa League place. And as a result, Wolves have to go to Stamford Bridge and try and play for a win.
Yeah, and United won the reverse fixture of this earlier on the season. Marcus Rashford got the only goal of that game. But when you look at the post-lockdown form, Phil, it really is counter-opposites when you look at Leicester and United. United have come out all guns blazing. Granted, last couple of weeks they have looked tired, but Leicester have fallen off a cliff. And that form is sort of a continuation of their form as well from before that, where they were really just struggling along. When Jamie Vardy doesn't score, then Leicester struggle as well. And that's been a theme for Leicester over the last couple of years. They've just had such an over-reliance on Jamie Vardy. But going into this game, if you look at United over the last couple of weeks, they've looked really tired, and there's been a lack of rotation in Solskjaer's team. Do you think, is that down to, firstly, like a naivety in Solskjaer's managerial style? Do you think it's because they don't have a plan B? Or do you think that he is sending a message to the United board that this is what I have in the team that I trust, these are the players that I have that I think can win games, on the bench I have nothing, therefore I'm going to do nothing?
Well, look what happened on Sunday. He obviously changed things. He had his winning 11 that was doing so well in the Premier League, Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba in there. Obviously, that front three in great form, banging in goals. Changes his formation for the Chelsea game, obviously changes his personnel. And some of the players that came in just weren't up to it. And some of the players they have on the bench are just not good enough if they want to go to the next step. And that's what he's talked about. He said that this game on Sunday, if they can secure Champions League football for next season, it's just part of the development. And Liverpool and Manchester United are always compared, given that they're the two biggest clubs in England. But there's similarities. The pattern of what Klopp did was, first of all, he got them into the top four. Then it was a case, can you sustain top four while you're playing in the Champions League? And this is the kind of trajectory that United are on at the moment, where it looks like they're going to finish in the top four. Then hopefully they bring in a few more players during the summer, and they can also finish in the top four again next season, close the gap on the top two while competing in the Champions League. You do need patience. It's incredible that just the nature of football, the way it is now, the way social media reacts to one negative result. You think back to Michael Obafemi scores pretty much with the last kick of the game, and you know there's people melting down online because United didn't win. I mean, they've done incredibly well to get themselves back into this race for the Champions League. Then obviously they get knocked out of the FA Cup. You know, Solskjaer with that team selection also pretty much told us what we already knew, that the Champions League is the most important thing. If you get silverware, fair enough. It's always nice to pick up silverware, but the Champions League is where it's at. United belong in the Champions League, not the Europa League like they're still in at the moment. So I think one thing we've seen, when this team doesn't function, there isn't really the backup on the bench. So there is obviously going to have to be investment there. In terms of looking tired, one thing I've always thought about this United team is, if you look at the best teams, like, okay, we've mentioned Liverpool there, they're the Premier League champions, Manchester City, they can keep going for 90 minutes. And I always thought with United, especially under Mourinho, they didn't do that much running.
Yeah,
you know, they sat in and they played quite defensive at times. And Solskjaer has tried to bring in more energy, but you have to wonder just how fit his squad is compared to other squads in terms of those levels. Now, that's something that they can work on, and I'm sure that's something they have been working on, and eventually they will close the gap. But I still think they get the job done on Sunday, just merely for the fact that Leicester just have too many injuries. You know, they're a little bit short of confidence, and United know that they can sit in and just pick Leicester off on the break.
Yeah, and I think over Solskjaer's career at United so far, one of the things he did highlight, first of all, last season was how little United squad had run that year, and he wanted to get those numbers up. Then you see the following injuries coming on from the fact that they were building up the training. I do think they are at a level now where they are much higher in fitness and in intensity that they were this time last year, but they still have a way to go as well. You mentioned a similarity with Liverpool, Phil. Another similarity with sort of Liverpool prior to 2 years ago when they brought Alisson in was just their inability to keep goals out because their goalkeeper was making silly mistakes, and without Virgil van Dijk, they were letting in silly goals as well. That's sort of where United are at this stage. Defensively, if Jamie Vardy's on form, I don't really want to focus on David De Gea because he's made these mistakes. It's been analysed to death. But ultimately, there is a defence in front of him that hasn't been functioning properly really since the lockdown. Harry Maguire has looked sluggish. Lindelof doesn't look up to it, doesn't look strong enough. If Jamie Vardy's on form on Sunday, then he can do them real damage.
Yeah, absolutely. It depends what formation Solskjaer goes with. I presume he'll go with his 4-2-3-1, but it, you know, as good as Vardy is, and he'll make those runs in behind, and I think sometimes this season we've seen where Harry Maguire has been caught out badly in terms of position, and sometimes his sense of position isn't great. Lindelof is probably a tidier footballer, you know, he'd be one of the lads that could do the cover work a bit better. But it's all about getting the supply into Jamie Vardy, and Leicester haven't really got that at the moment because James Maddison he's not fit. And, you know, apart from coming on at the second half of the Everton game when they were chasing the goal, Maddison hasn't played, and that's a big problem for them. And obviously their two creative fullbacks are not there either, in Pereira and Ben Chilwell. So Vardy will always pose that threat because he has explosive pace. And you remember back to that game when he scored at the King Power Stadium when Leicester came from behind and beat Manchester United 5-3 when Van Gaal was in charge of United. And that was kind of the start of where Jamie Vardy's Premier League trajectory on the up. And, you know, he obviously wants to make sure he finishes off top scorer, which pretty much looks in the bag at the moment. But, you know, Leicester need just more than Jamie Vardy. So I think as vulnerable as United have looked at times, I think they'll have enough to be able to see it out. Maybe they can see the goal, but I think they'll definitely fancy the chances of getting a couple of goals on Sunday.
Yeah, and if you want to listen to that show, if you want to listen to the match instead of watching it, or if you're in the car and you're not going to be able to catch it, we'll have full live commentary of that game with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr on Sunday as well. The odds in that game are Leicester 11-5, Man United 11-10, and a draw is 12-5. So on Paddy Power, they're definitely favouring a draw this weekend. Moving on to the other Champions League game, or the game that will decide the Champions League spots, rather, is Chelsea against Wolves on at the same time. Over the last couple of weeks, one thing that has become apparent with Chelsea is that they will score loads of goals, but they will concede loads as well, and that was really shown up against Liverpool during the week. Chelsea have now conceded more goals than Brighton this season, and overall defensively they have one of the worst records from defending corners as well. So that's somewhere that Wolves can really damage Chelsea this weekend. Well, we've seen Wolves since the lockdown. They've been a little bit inconsistent, but if they can get Adama Traore ticking down that right-hand side, we saw Chelsea throughout this season struggle at that position with Marcus Alonso. He doesn't have the pace. If he's starting this weekend, then Adama Traore could have a field day.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Alonso and Rudiger aren't exactly blessed for pace down that right-hand side. I do, again, wonder whether Adama Traore is going to start or whether he's a weapon that can maybe be brought on in the second half of that game at Stamford Bridge. It's an interesting point you make on the set pieces. You know, Chelsea have been horrific on corners. And again, they conceded on corners during the week against Liverpool and looked susceptible every time that Trent Alexander-Arnold put in a good cross. And there's good set-piece delivery in that Wolves team. And although they're not the tallest team around, it's really a lack of organisation in the defensive positions, where Chelsea have tried to go man-to-man at times this season. They've gone zonal. They definitely are susceptible to conceding goals at set pieces, and I'm sure that Wolves will be looking at that as a potential way to score. As I mentioned at the outset, Wolves have got plenty of motivation here because they've hit a little bit of form in recent weeks. They've won two of their last three and got themselves back into the top six. After what Tottenham did to Leicester last weekend, Wolves know that they have to get a result to be assured of Europa League football for next season. And And although they're still in the Europa League this year, and maybe they can qualify by winning that, they've got a difficult path to the final. I think for Wolves, they want to back up last season by getting back into the Europa League again this year. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Chelsea deploy their team too, because we got to see some of the really good from Chelsea during the week at Anfield, and we got to see some of the really bad. I think Christian Pulisic probably has to start in that team, because he was excellent against Liverpool in the spell that he was on the pitch. He had a fantastic game. And again, he's been kind of central to a lot of the good stuff that they've done in recent weeks. I think they'll probably still stick with Olivier Giroud up front. Both Giroud and Tammy Abraham scored during the week. But I think they stick with Giroud up front for this one. I think it'll be safety first from Chelsea. They'll make sure that they don't concede silly goals like they did against Liverpool midweek. But I would give Wolves, I don't know how you feel, Phil, I'd give Wolves every shot of getting something at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, and look, a draw is fine for Chelsea. And I think the problem they have, they'll probably go three at the back, and obviously that will mirror what Wolves do. Obviously, Wolves are a lot more comfortable playing in that formation. That's what they've done in their two seasons in the Premier League under Nuno. But Chelsea look so vulnerable at the back because they have a goalkeeper who has zero confidence. So if you're a defender, every time that ball goes into the box, it makes for a few nervy moments. And, you know, you're watching the game the other night and there was 8 goals scored, and we've got the 2 most expensive goalkeepers in the world in either end. Now, I think with Liverpool, you can give them a bit more of a free pass because they've wrapped up the league title, and, you know, they're not playing with the same intensity. I think if that game was played and Liverpool needed to win, they would obviously probably have been a bit tighter at the back. But with Chelsea, we've seen them conceding. Sometimes they concede a bucket load of goals. But, you know, there's already talk of them looking to replace Kepa, which is not good for the amount of money they spent on him. He obviously had that incident under Sarri last season in the League Cup final. But like, Willie Caballero's the backup.
Well, that's it, Phil. This is the question I was going to pose to you. So Kepa, it was revealed, I think Duncan Alexander tweeted it out, that he's conceded 8% of all of Chelsea's goals in Premier League history. So it has not worked out for him so far. I always thought that he might end up sort of like a David De Gea, where he eventually bulks up and demands the box a little bit more. That hasn't happened. There's a lot of discussion around David De Gea this week around whether, going into this final fixture, do you start Romero? Does Solskjaer trust Romero to do this? Is it more secure for him to put the backup goalkeeper in? Is that the case for Chelsea now? Like, do Chelsea trust Caballero more than they trust Kepa in this game?
Well, if they trust Caballero more, they shouldn't. No, I mean, Caballero obviously started last week against United, and when I'm sure United fans, when they saw Caballero starting in goal, they were probably rubbing their hands at the thoughts of even just getting a few shots on target on him. But yeah, I think Kepa obviously will hold on to his place for Sunday, and I feel the same with De Gea. I think actually what Solskjaer might do, he has an excuse to play Romero in the Europa League because it's something that he has done. And Romero has always played, usually has always played cup games and European games. But if you were to drop De Gea, obviously he played against West Ham, but if you were to have dropped him for the West Ham game or the Leicester match, that doesn't send a great message to him. And you also have to think of the long game. If United are going to sell David De Gea, I don't know who out there is going to be able to afford the wages he commands, given the fact that he's not the keeper that he once was. I mean, maybe there's a few clubs in Spain, but would they be able to fork out almost 400 grand a week? I'm not sure about that. But United, if they are ever going to sell him, if they drop him, maybe they're dropping a bit of the chunk of the asking price as well. But I think they'll stick with him. And Kasper Schmeichel was talking about David De Gea and the build-up to this game, where he basically said, you know, unless you've played at an elite level as a goalkeeper, you basically keep your mouth shut, like, you know, because, you know, every time there's a goal conceded, we have everyone analysing why they conceded the goal, but we don't tend to hear from goalkeepers why a goalkeeper conceded a goal. It tends to be defenders or strikers, but that's probably another day's discussion. I think that they stick with De Gea, and look, it might come back to bite them, but even Kasper Schmeichel's reliable. Look what happened to him away at Bournemouth. He had a few lapses of concentration, and that cost them a 4-1 defeat, and that could end up costing them a place in the Champions League next season. It happens.
I think he'll pick Solskjaer I think Solskjaer will pick De Gea this weekend. I mean, I think his colours have been very much put to the mask, because if he was going to drop him at any point, it was for the West Ham game midweek after what happened, because De Gea's confidence does look shocked. But The only other option is to maybe do what Alex Ferguson did early in David De Gea's career at Old Trafford, and that's when he put Lindegaard, who scored for Helsingborg last weekend in a bottom of the table clash in Sweden. But Lindegaard came in to try and maybe take the pressure off De Gea a little bit. But I think at this point in De Gea's career, you have to back him entirely. Like Phil said, I don't see anywhere where they could sell him this year. You know, Real Madrid already have Thibaut Courtois. His old club, Atletico Madrid, already have Jan Oblak, who's probably one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Another one, the very best, in Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, is at Barcelona. So an option going back to Spain probably isn't there. And I think Solskjaer genuinely sees De Gea as his first-choice goalkeeper. I think you got to play him this weekend for his own confidence as well, and then maybe make an assessment after the Europa League. If Sergio Romero has a fantastic campaign and Manchester United win the Europa League, it's an easier sell for everybody if you put him in as first choice for the start of the new season.
Yeah, look, I also don't buy into the argument that David De Gea is a terrible goalkeeper for some reason, just because he made, I think it's 3 mistakes now leading to a goal overall this season in the Premier League, and he made a couple in the Europa League earlier on. But I don't buy into the fact that suddenly he's a terrible goalkeeper. He's still one of the best in the world. But maybe the game's just passed him by a little bit. He hasn't really developed in the sense of demanding the penalty area. His kicking out isn't as good as the likes of Ederson. And if you're going to be playing counter-attacking football, you kind of need your goalkeeper to be able to start to play as well. So anyway, that's a conversation for another day. The Champions League is an important race, but probably more important to clubs financially is the relegation race. And I know what you've all been waiting for. You've been waiting for me to read out the permutation for this. It gets a little bit more complicated down the bottom, as you know. So Aston Villa, Watford and Bournemouth are the 3 clubs that are essentially fighting for their place in the Premier League. Aston Villa come up against West Ham. If they match Watford's result, then they are safe. But if they both lose and Bournemouth win, then Villa go down. If Watford are playing Arsenal, if Villa win, they need to better that result by 1 or 2 goals. And if Villa draw, a win will do Watford. And if Villa lose, then a draw is enough for Watford as well. And Bournemouth, they have the more difficult task of all 3 clubs. So they play Everton, which is a big clash for them. They have to win to be in with a chance to survive. But they also need Villa and Watford to lose. So they need both Arsenal and West Ham to win this weekend. And they need to win as well to stay up. We'll start with Bournemouth, first of all, because they've got the harder task. Phil, we've spoken about Bournemouth over the last few months. Eddie Howe's job probably will come to an end with Bournemouth if they go down to the Championship. It just hasn't been their season. They haven't been able to click. Injuries have been all over the place. And just defensively, ultimately, is where Bournemouth have always fallen down, and it's finally caught up with them.
Yeah, they've always conceded goals, but they've always been able to score goals. This season they haven't been as prolific, and the recruitment has been poor. That you think of the team that came up and you had the likes of Simon Francis and Steve Cook playing centre half, and Steve Cook is still there. He obviously came on when Nathan Ake went off with an injury against Leicester, and you know he's been a great servant to the club, but the problem is they haven't been able to develop from that team that came up to the Championship. They've had some good players, and yeah, you know, if they did go down, there'd be a few suitors around looking for some of their top players. Ake would be one, but they're just not scoring enough goals. And as I said, they've always conceded. You never really trusted them to keep a clean sheet. Now, that Leicester game obviously gave them a little bit of hope. Against Southampton, they thought they'd got the equaliser. Everton obviously haven't been great the last few weeks. But at Goodison Park, they're quite a tough nut to crack, and Bournemouth have to win. So, you know, I've pretty much written off Bournemouth. And I think if Bournemouth survive, that is the great escape. And I know Eddie Howe has talked about how, look, it can happen. The Championship this week has proven anything can happen when you consider what Swansea and Nottingham Forest, they swapped positions with that bizarre goal difference turnaround. So obviously Bournemouth just have to go out and get it done, but I don't think they will get it done. I really struggle to make a case for them to beat Everton. And then it pretty much comes down to Villa and Watford. Obviously, Watford are going to pay the price for conceding all those goals against City. To be honest, at 4, there was still a bit of time to go. I thought they could concede 5 or 6. So they've given themselves a bit of a chance. But can you see them beating Arsenal? Maybe a draw would be good enough if West Ham beat Villa. But Villa, as I said at the start of the program, they're the ones that have actually got a bit of form there. They've actually started to look a bit more solid at the back. Arsenal didn't even have a shot on target the other night, and Trezeguet has come up with some important goals as well. So I think Villa are, I wouldn't say in the box seat or the driving seat, but just have the slight advantage.
Yeah, I think out of all three clubs, that Villa probably has it, have the easier game as well, because West Ham are safe now. West Ham have been good over the last few weeks, but now that they've finally secured their place in the Premier League for next season, then there might be a chance that they get a little bit lax. Other than that, Arsenal are really in really good form against Watford. Well, on Watford, do they almost deserve to go down? Not because they sacked Pearson, but because of the way they've run the club over the last few years. They've gotten away with it a little bit, and the dysfunction in the club has caught up with them this year. Pearson almost saved them, just didn't, came up a little bit short at the end, but ultimately it's been a couple of years coming for Watford.
Yeah, look, if they had not sacked Nigel Pearson last week, in all likelihood they're going into the last weekend of the season in 18th place, given how Man City played during the week. I think even if Pearson had been in charge, it wouldn't have made a huge amount of difference. It obviously is very strange to see the jettisoning of a manager with just two games left, particularly when their last two fixtures were as difficult as Man City at home and away to Arsenal on the final day of the season. And it makes it very difficult for Hayden Mullins to try and get anything across in time to try and make any kind of fundamental changes. And it was interesting listening to Ben Foster, who had a very difficult night with a lot of shots he hit the face against Man City. And he was saying that their confidence is on the absolute floor. The only thing about Arsenal is they're sitting in 10th place. They're going to finish outside the top six for the first time in 25 years. They know they've got the FA Cup final. And the only real motivation for their players going into this weekend is playing for places for the FA Cup final at the start of next month. They were very poor, I thought, against Aston Villa during the week. As Phil mentioned, they failed to have a shot on target. They changed shape a couple of times during the game. The system was perfect against Man City on Saturday, but it didn't seem to work for them during the week. So I'm intrigued to see what kind of team that Mikel Arteta picks. He said at his press conference yesterday afternoon that he's going to go with a strong team. He wants to respect the integrity of the bottom three. But if I'm one of the teams around me, I wouldn't exactly be hoping that Arsenal will do them some kind of favour. So Watford can go there with a chance to win, but it's very difficult to see Watford, who are definitely looking slidey over the last couple of weeks. And that West Ham game was so important. It almost felt like a relegation playoff. It wasn't going to be a direct relegation, but as we've seen, the team who won were going to move comfortably clear of the bottom three, and that's what happened with West Ham. That affects West Ham's motivation going into the game at the London Stadium against Aston Villa. They know that they're safe no matter what happens this weekend. As Phil mentioned, Villa have hit a bit of form, 7 points from their last nine. They look a lot better than they did against Manchester United just a few weeks ago. Good from an Irish perspective that Conor Howran has been playing well in the middle of the field for Aston Villa over the last few weeks. And finally, Trezeguet has started to score some goals at the most important period of the season. And as we saw during the week, they look a lot more defensively solid than they did just a few weeks ago. So I know momentum doesn't really exist, but if you were to consider where Aston Villa are going into this weekend, you'd have to favour them of the three teams to get a result. I'd be shocked if Bournemouth get anything at Everton, even when Everton have nothing to play for, because Bournemouth have had two central problems ended. They've lost their main creator in Ryan Fraser because he decided he was going to leave the club. So they had to play seven or eight games without him involved because they know he's going to leave. And Callum Wilson's goals have dried up. And whatever problems Bournemouth have had at the back in previous seasons, Wilson's goals were enough to get them out of any kind of trouble. This time around, they've dried up. They're not scoring goals in a general sense. I mean, we talk about the amount of goals they've conceded, but they're going at less than goal a game. They've scored 36 goals in 37 games, and that tells its own story.
Yeah, and Bournemouth are one of these clubs that I would actually worry for going forward should they get relegated into the Championship, because first of all, we don't actually know what the revenue is going to be like next year when it comes to the Championship. We don't know if the parachute payments are going to be the same from the Premier League. And also, Bournemouth have spent an exorbitant amount of money over the last couple of years. Also, badly as well, as you say. And also, they've put plans in place for a new stadium. So they were building for the future in the Premier League. That future in the Premier League may not be there anymore if they get relegated. I know we're 2 days off from these games coming around, and I know it's hard to predict these games before we actually see the team sheets, but I'm going to ask you to do that anyway. Phil, I'll give you your first choice. Who's finishing third, who's finishing fourth, and who's going to get relegated?
Okay, I'm going to go. I think United will get the job done, but just think Leicester are a very nice team and they pass it around, but I think if United break on them, they could have a comfortable enough afternoon. So I think United will get third. I think Chelsea will get get what they need to get the job done, and they'll finish fourth. And I think going down are Bournemouth and Watford. I think Arsenal have taken a bit of stick off Watford in the past. Troy Deeney's stuck the boot into them a few times. He's questioned their cojones. Well, Arsenal have a chance to bury Watford, and I think they'll do it, because I think Arteta will actually go with a strong team, because he's got a week then to prepare for the cup final. So this is another chance for him to pick his strongest team and see how they get on.
Will, I'm presuming yours is similar?
Yeah, Leicester were quite poor against Tottenham last weekend. I think that's the big worrying sign if you're a Leicester fan going into this last game against Manchester United. I fancy United to get at least a draw. I think they'll get behind that central defence of Wes Morgan and Johnny Evans quite a few times during the game too. I actually would probably be edging towards a Manchester United win, which would be enough for them to finish in third and qualify directly for the group stages of the Champions League next year. I think Chelsea will just about get the job done against Wolves, but like I was saying earlier, I wouldn't be at all surprised if Wolves get a draw or a win in that one. They tend to play very well when they go up against teams around the top six too. If Wolves do slip up, that puts Tottenham into the Europa League, saying Tottenham win against Crystal Palace. At the bottom, I can't see Bournemouth getting any kind of result against Everton, even with Everton being demotivated. I think they'll want to finish the season out strongly. I think Arsenal probably take care of Watford. Watford looked terrible during the week against Man City. And a draw for Aston Villa away to West Ham is probably going to be enough to keep them up. So I think Villa are probably going to have the what will feel like a great escape. Not maybe as dramatic as it would be if Bournemouth were to pull it off on the last day. But I think Villa didn't see it a few weeks ago. But in the last four games, it looks like they've saved their skin.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's going to be an exciting weekend all around. And a reminder that we will have full live commentary of that Leicester United game here on Off the Ball with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr as well. Kickoff for that is 4 o'clock. Just, Phil, before we finish up, a final word. Jordan Henderson today was voted the Football Writers Player of the Year. The main favourites going forward for the PFA Player of the Year that's going to be awarded this weekend, Kevin De Bruyne, Jordan Henderson, Sadio Mane are the front runners. Any of those three stick out for you?
I think it's quite clear that a lot of people are surprised Jordan Henderson won the Football Writers Award. But, you know, I think he's not the most talented player in the Liverpool squad, but there's a reason Jurgen Klopp has him as his captain. You know, he sees that mix of ability, but also it's his attitude, and that's why Klopp loves him as his captain. And he's had a really good season. You think of the little period where Fabinho picked up the injury and Henderson slotted into that position, and Fabinho wasn't missed at all, and Jordan Henderson's had a really good season. See, what can happen is the best players, the likes of Virgil van Dijk and Kevin De Bruyne, are so good that it becomes expected they perform like this week in, week out. And I think I'd include Sadio Mane in that bracket as well, where it's not that you take it for granted, but you know, if they're not doing it every week, you think they haven't had a good game. But these are phenomenal players. But yeah, I'd be looking at Van Dijk or Mane, and then De Bruyne would be kind of the three I would have been looking at. And I think someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold for your Young Player of the Year.
And you can find all the odds for the PFA Player of the Year on Paddy Power. A reminder that our football coverage here in Off the Ball is in association with Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit dunluie.net. Lads, enjoy the football over the weekend. I'm sure we'll be chatting about it. Cheers, at the same time, same place next week. Until then, we'll see you later.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power.
Less flashy than a Jurgen Klopp smile, but just as effective.
Gamble responsibly. See dunluie.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.